episode 160 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded November 30th, 2017. Marvelous!
Darling, you look marvelous.
You look marvelous.
That's a 30 or 40 year old reference.
I was about to say, is anyone going to?
No one's
going to
get that.
It's Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal. Marvelous.
Yes. I don't know where it's from. SNL
reference.
Yeah,
yes.
He's referencing an older actor.
God, it's like 80. Yeah, but the reference itself is from like 85.
Yeah.
Charles Lynn.
It's not Lindbergh.
Charles Lindbergh. Famous for
Lindbergh
having his baby kidnapped.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a flying stuff and looking
sympathy.
Marvelous and Nazi sympathizers.
Okay, cool. So
Charles look marvelous.
Charles, I don't know the name of the person I was trying to think of. Whatever. Hey guys, we're the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
I'm Les.
And that was an odd intro for us talking about Marvel shows.
Yeah.
We're talking about two Marvel shows, The Runaways. Is it The Runaways or Runaways?
It is Marvel's Runaways.
Runaways. Okay, and we're also talking about The Punisher. Is it The Punisher?
It is The Punisher. And it's not Marvel's The Punisher, because on Netflix, I guess they just assume.
Netflix is
The Punisher.
And then we're also going to be talking about the new Netflix drama, Godless.
Which is Marvel's Godless.
Yeah. Marvel just takes credit for that
one,
too.
Credit, yeah. I mean, they got Western characters. Two gun kids in there somewhere.
They just have this cool stamp they just bought, and they just bomb. Bomb. That's our show too now.
Yeah, did you guys see Marvel's Justice League?
Oh, it was great.
And Marvel's Murder on the Orient Express.
I feel like if it was Marvel's Justice League, it would have been good.
Oh.
I didn't see it.
I didn't
see
it.
I'm just
saying. Crisis
slamming.
On Earth X was fine.
Yes. You mean Marvel's Crisis on Infinite Earth X?
Hey, guys. If you want to help support the show, you can go to our iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and write a little review, and that will really help us out. And in fact, we have a new iTunes review.
Yay!
And this one comes to us from Fulton D. Smith, who says, TV plus podcasts equals 5 stars. As someone who listens to television shows while driving, listening to people talk about them is pretty nice. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to more guests and random appearances by past TV dudes. Thank you, Fulton D. Smith. We appreciate that. And once again, if you guys want to help us out, go to iTunes, give us that 5-star rating, and write a little review. Really helps us out here on the show. And we also want to say that if you guys have a little bit of extra spending cash and you are feeling in the holiday spirit, you can go to patreon.com/TVDudes, and there you can make a per-episode pledge. What does that mean? It means give us $1 an episode, $2 if you're feeling extra generous. And you guys will be helping support the show that you love, this little podcast we call the TV Dudes.
Not a lot of people know that Santa was the original podcaster.
Yeah, he
made the first podcast.
He was only in it for the money.
He was only in it for the money. Yeah. Somebody's got to pay those elves, man.
Yeah, he just showed up and talked, man. The elves made that podcast.
Yeah, that's true. He's actually right. Well, the elves did a lot of the production work.
Yeah, is he really paying them?
No.
I feel it's a sweatshop.
Yeah, it's probably true.
It's an elf sweatshop.
But he tried to get the podcast so he could pay the elves.
Yeah, okay.
So really, it's the patron's fault.
He tried. He made an effort after decades, centuries of slavery. All right, that's weird. Weird direction to go with that. Patreon.com/TV Dudes. And we have bonus exclusive content there every single week. We do just for you guys to say thank you for all the support you give us. Oh, and guess what, guys? We actually have a new patron, Charles Armstrong, our buddy Charles. He's now a patron, so thank you.
Awesome.
Yeah, welcome aboard. All right, let's get into our listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, once a week, Randy puts up a little question post, and we never know what you guys are going to ask. Let's find out. First one comes to us from our buddy, Jonathan Huffnagel, who says, Heroic TV Dudes! I missed a question for last show, but if I recall, it had something to do with superhero burnout. Punisher was okay, but beyond Legion, there were no real great superhero shows this year that I can remember. Runaways and The Gifted have not gripped me past their pilots, and beyond Gotham, I've dropped the DC shows for a while. I finally decided to catch up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I still have some hope for next season's premiere soon.
You, don't, dude. Frankly, I am more excited for The Crown Season 2.
That is not a superhero show.
But fuck yeah, I'm excited for that. That comes out December 8th, guys, on Netflix.
But that is not a superhero show, right?
Well,
I didn't finish Season 1, so don't tell me if I may get superpowers.
You didn't see the gamma ray?
I didn't see the gamma ray. I didn't see the gamma ray episode, no.
The Crown, it transforms her.
The Crown is his superhero name?
Yeah.
She'd be like, fight Churchill, is it?
Knockdown dragout. All things considered, I believe my question last week was going to concern DC animated shows. Young Justice Season 3 is just around the corner.
Yes.
Over the holiday, I've turned to rewatching some of my favorite episodes of Old Justice League and Batman animated series. What are some of your all-time favorite episodes of old DC animated shows? Not necessarily the best of all time or best written, but episodes that speak personally to you. And why so?
For me, I mean, I watched the Batman animated series when it came out, and I loved it. I was in, I think, junior high or high school when those were first airing, and they were revolutionary, just amazing. But my favorite of all of the Justice League or Batman animated shows is Batman Brave and the Bold.
Oh, it's great.
It's amazing. It's Dietrich Bader's Batman. It's super goofy. It's got Batmite. They do all kinds of weird meta episodes. They open with like a James Bond kind of cold open, like kind of open it up. In a different adventure, basically, and then do the credits.
Yep.
And that other adventure is always from the furthest, darkest corner of the DC universe. Like,
for example, the Metal Men helping Batman pose as a space pimp.
Yes. Bawana Beast is up there quite a bit.
Bawana Beast is a heavy character, and he has a big old arc in that show.
There are some really great, just amazing, like, obscure. And similarly with Justice League, I really like Justice League Unlimited better because it let them play more fully with the full DC cast. Because I'm always thrilled when I see – that's how I first got to see Firestorm and stuff show up. I mean, I know he's a major player now on TV, kind of. But but he wasn't when I was, you know, for the longest time, like, this is where I got to see obscure characters that I loved from the DC universe. And so those are always my favorite ones that really meant something to me. The very last Batman Brave and the Bold episode where they do the rap party after getting canceled is friggin' amazing.
I also love Brave and the Bold. I actually love all the DC animated. The Justice League that did the Suicide Squad episode was fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The one that is sort of the culmination of the whole plot with Brainiac and Luthor and Amanda Waller sort of winding up teaming up with Justice League. That's pretty fantastic and has some pretty great stuff. The one where Flash gets brain swapped with Lex Luthor is fantastic. The first episode of Season 2 of Young Justice, where they revealed that like 5 years have passed and the whole team has changed, that blew my mind. I was like, wow, they really are just going for it here, and they completely changed the show.
Yeah.
And then Batman Animated, I got to go with Over the Edge, which is the sort of nightmare scenario of Bruce Wayne as he thinks about what happened to Batgirl, and he winds up hunted by the police, and his like identity Sting? Gets outed, and it's so good.
Like Sting comes after him?
Like Sting?
Sting, yes. From the police?
Yes, Sting and all the rest of the police. Nobody knows.
Stuart Copeland.
Oh, wow. You knew one of the other ones.
Yeah, I only knew one. I was hoping that would carry the joke. All right, next question comes to us from Zach McLernan, because I didn't have an answer to that other question. A multiverse portal opens up and you have to spend a year on board a sci-fi ship from a TV show. Your choices are the Orville, the USS Discovery, the Serenity, or the Ghost from Star Wars Rebels. Which do you choose and why? And what, if anything, would be your season arc? If the ship is destroyed, you die with the ship and you do not have any special powers or skills. You are just you.
Is there any answer to this question besides the Orville?
No.
Yeah, I was like, which one is the safest?
Nothing
Orville?
Ends well for me on any of the rest of those ships.
No, I'm aboard the Orville, and my story arc is I'm the romantic fling for Kelly Grayson before she gets back to her husband, because that's Adrian Palicki, and of course that's what I'm cast myself as.
That's a completely believable arc on the Orville.
Yeah, exactly, right? Only
like
on the Orville.
Like your random 2 or 3 episode thing would...
I probably have like ears, crazy ears, and crazy forehead ridge, but
Rob
Lowe
style, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta say... Could I be the romantic interest of that green blob dude that's Norm MacDonald's voice? Because when he's just like absorbing her body, I was like, whoa, your entire body is like a sexual organ for other people. That's kind of
and
fascinating
they really went with
to
it.
Me.
They
really did.
Yeah, and I was like, okay, I can do that.
Because let's game this out a little bit. On the Discovery, all of us are dead. all of us are going to die. Like, we might get to go to one good space party and drink a little bit, but we're all going to die.
We look down and all of us are wearing red shirts.
We're all going to die.
Best case scenario, you legitimately actually die.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably what's going to happen is that, like, you end up taken by mad space captain to wherever the hell they are now, and, you know, it's like a dimension where you can't die or something. Like,
yeah,
that's the kind of crap that's going to end up happening to the crew of Discovery. Like, you're going to end up, like, out of space time and half ghost dead. This is seriously, this is how Chronicles of Riddick starts.
Yeah. The Serenity, we are like temporary passengers and they're going to be looking to get it offload us as fast as they can. Yeah. And that's a rinky dink, barely held together bucket of bolts
and,
of ship.
And that doesn't, if you're not a main cast member there, things do not end well for you.
Well, there's only main, I mean, I'm going to spend the remainder of my life, which is going to be like five, I saw a book, I'm just going to be 5-10 years top. With like only 4 or 5 other people that I'm ever going to friggin' see. If we go to a planet and I meet another person, I am the A plot and I'm dooming us.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay.
The Orville has, like, one of the things I loved about the first episode of The Orville was that they actually had like a whole crew and he addressed like a crowd of people. That's a lot of people. Yep. I could conceivably get lost in the background of The Orville and we would just have wacky lessons where I learned something good about myself and some character.
And it looks like really nicely designed and clean. You have like a really swank bedroom and like all that.
Gorgeous. It's the future that Star Trek Discovery is trying to get to.
Yeah. And then there's the Ghost, which I love Rebels. I love that crew, but
isn't that the tiniest ship?
They're in the middle of a galactic civil war, and they're on the wrong side because they're in the baby resistance getting crushed.
I haven't watched any of this, but that's all before the
before the Death Star.
We grew up.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, this is all to say that we're a bunch of big pussies, and we want to avoid all conflict.
Yeah, put me on the Orville. The only thing is, if I can be on board the Serenity and I can be involved in some way
with Adrian Palicki. And you and the Offit.
No. If I'm on the Serenity.
Oh, the Serenity.
And I'm in good with the crew. Like, if somehow I served with Mal and Zoe, I might make it out alive.
You're the new Wash. You're the funny guy.
Oh, I could be Wash. Yeah, all right. I can do that. I can't fly a ship, though.
I still feel like this
is
like...
Yeah, but you can take a great spear to the chest.
It's like choosing between, like, do you want to be in Fifth Element or Aliens franchise? Like, no, I'm going
to go with Fifth Element. Yeah, yeah.
Everything in the Orville just kind of seems like a wacky hijink that they're going to get me out of.
Yeah, I think the Orville is the clear winner. There's, like, really no other answer.
Javier Mancia says, hey, TV dudes, I'm liking, not loving, Runaways so far, and I suppose it's because of the off-putting changes being made from the source material. Granted, I understand to sustain several episodes over a few seasons means expanding the material, but what are your first impressions of these changes so far? Personally, I was excited to see young Molly interacting with the rest of the crew, but she's almost just as mature as they are, or the addition of Nico having a sister, etc. Thank you, and keep on keeping on, TV dudes. And to that, Javier, I'm going to say we're actually going to discuss a whole segment about Runaways and address those issues in particular when we get to that segment. We got one more question. That one comes to us from Nick Thighs. This is our last question. He says, hey, did any of you TV dudes watch the CW Crisis on Earth X crossover event? Because it has Nazi doppelgangers that the team has to beat up. What other shows do you think could use Nazi doppelgangers? My vote? My crazy ex-girlfriend. My crazy ex-Nazi girlfriend.
So we are going to talk about that event next week. I've only seen the first part. Les has seen all of it. Grant hasn't seen any yet.
Oh, I'm not going to.
Yeah. No, it was super fun. Yep. No pun intended. I loved it.
But the Nazi doppelgangers show up pretty early. So what show needs Nazi doppelgangers?
Nazi doppelgangers.
I'm a big fan of disconnected Halloween episodes where just like crazy shit happens and it has no ramification on what, you know, the next episode, like just to, you know, pluck one out and have everybody turn into zombies, everybody dies, whatever.
Yep.
Those are perfect for this. And so any number of 80s, 90s sitcoms.
The Full House.
All Cheers, Night Court. Like, I want full Nazi doppelganger episodes of all of it. I would not want to push forward into sitcoms like – I was thinking the blander the sitcom, the better. So like the Nazi doppelgangers on ALF would be great, or Family Ties. But like the middle or something, I would be really afraid that like we'd end up with like a very special episode about how there's, you know, good people on Earth X.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
Can I just get like some weird kids show like Peppa Pig? All
right,
the Nazi doppelganger.
Amazing. I feel like Phineas and Ferb has probably already done this.
Oh, I'm sure there's Nazi doppelgangers in Phineas and Ferb. Yeah, that seems very likely.
Oh, Nazi Rugrats doppelganger would be Tom. You'd have to fight him.
All right. The TV dudes with Nazi doppelgangers. Just, what are they doing podcasting? What are they talking about on their podcast?
Nothing good.
Nothing?
No. No.
That's a correct
answer. I want less Nazis, not more.
Less Nazis?
No.
Oh, less Nazis. Less Nazis, yes.
Fewer
Nazis. Nazis. So we're going to start with some HBO shows, or HBO news.
HBO news.
Because there's some notable stuff. So we learned that HBO passed on the Lord of the Rings TV show.
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting, because it would stand to reason, I would think, that having that kind of a monster franchise paired up with HBO would mean, like, oh, this is going to be their new big tentpole.
I imagine if I'm HBO, I'm thinking, we just did Game of Thrones, a super expensive, super successful show. If we do Lord of the Rings, everyone is going to be comparing us to ourselves. We're going to spend just as much, if not more, money, and we're going to have much higher expectations.
You couldn't possibly look more bankrupt of ideas than following Game of Thrones with Lord of the Rings, which does not need another second of screen time dedicated to that story.
But for Amazon, it makes total sense, because Amazon needs their big tentpole hit. And I understand why they're doing it. I don't really care, but I understand why they're doing it. And
they wouldn't own necessarily all of the brand, right?
Right. But they don't own Game of Thrones.
I think they have a much bigger stake in it.
Okay.
I've seen some really wonderful, like, here's 10 things that ought to be adapted before doing
I've seen that too, those lists.
TV show. Those have been great.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're all true. There's so many properties that are not more Lord of the Rings.
I mean, do we think that it's going to fail? I think the fan base for Lord of the Rings is still so rabid that this could be...
I don't think it'll fail.
Yeah, but it's going to be a high-pressure situation to make something good.
Yeah, it's not, and it's not going to shockingly blow up again. Like, it's not going to be Game of Thrones.
Yeah, the problem is that, like, when you adapt or, like, come back and do another reimagining of something that sucked, then you have a lot of room to improve.
Yeah.
But they're coming off of the Lord of the Rings franchise, which was great.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, live up to that. At least that's your bar, and you have to somehow surpass that.
Yeah. I think it's a bad idea. I'm glad they're not going to do it. I feel like that is all like capital and work hours that can be put towards any number of other properties. I really hope that they just do something else.
Well,
this ties into a think piece from Washington Post about what HBO's future is going to be like, since that Game of Thrones is coming to an end, that, you know, they didn't land a big pilot from Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston, which, by the way, I think they're probably better off not having said. That does not sound like the HBO's tentpole to me, regardless. Yeah. But they are they continue to hit ratings highs. They had a revenue jump of 12% in the third quarter. They've got 130 million global subscribers. Like, I don't know why anyone who looks at HBO and looks and goes, these guys aren't going to make it. Because they also point out in this article, they have Lovecraft Country, which is based on a much-loved novel by Jordan Peele, who's coming off of Get Out.
Jordan Peele is making an HBO show.
Yeah.
Damon Lindelof is right now working on the Watchmen. TV show project.
Yep.
And I feel like if he's able to pull, like, I have, of course, the most confidence in Damon Lindelof, probably of anyone. I feel like he's going to be able to do a great job there.
Yeah, I think that they're looking at this and they're talking about things like saying that, you know, well, they've got a couple of unproven newer shows like Westworld and The Deuce and Vice Principals. And I'm like,
unproven
Vice Principals?
Westworld?
Yeah, Westworld was a huge hit. The Deuce is always going to be what it is, which is it's the new prestige show for them. It's going to be small audience, but it's going to be well liked.
Critically acclaimed.
And
right?
Vice Principals is already over.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about, like, Westworld wasn't, like, as big as I think they hoped. Like, it It got some pretty good numbers, but didn't have huge numbers from what I recall. And I think that's just because it was also a little bit more cerebral than people anticipated.
I think as soon as people started realizing it was complicated, I know some people that were like, I'm waiting till Westworld season's done.
Yeah.
And not getting into it.
Yeah, because it's intimidating, and you kind of, if you're going to invest, you don't want to scratch your head too much. And Game of Thrones, for as many different, like, characters that it's bouncing around to, and it seems like this big web of complication, it also has fun dragons and shit. And so, like, maybe people are just able to get lost in that a little more.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about, like, Lovecraft Country. Some of HBO stuff sounds great.
Yeah, these things always come out. People got freaked out right after Sopranos and right before Game of Thrones kicked in because they're like seeing John from Cincinnati and whatever that other show was that were right in that break. And they're like, are they going to be able to survive this?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Game of Thrones comes up and it's like, holy shit.
Well, and then the question everybody keeps asking is, you know, we're seeing all these different subscription services start and they're like, well, can HBO compete? It's $15 a month. But the thing is, their back catalog is stronger than almost anybody, probably even stronger than something like Netflix that has more content, but it isn't all prestige content.
Yeah.
So I think it's a crazy think piece. It's kind of funny that people are always wanting HBO to fall, I think.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen.
I think once HBO – like if cable really falls, HBO can drop their price point and expand to so many more people and still do great.
Yep.
And they know their brand. At ATX Fest, every time the panel it was at the ATX showrunner, it was like network identity panel at the ATX, not showrunner, one of their network executives was there. Mm-hmm. And when they asked everybody brand, Prestige is their brand. Like they are looking for top quality. Like they know there's a look to an HBO show that they're, doesn't matter what genre it is or what thing it is, you know there's a production quality level and how good it's going to look. And I feel like they've got that down. I feel like you're right. People just want to write a think piece about HBO falling flat.
So, good news. The Good Place has been officially renewed for season 3.
Uh-huh.
That's fantastic.
Isn't it? Because it doesn't get, like, the best ratings.
No. But they're still good. It's another 13-episode outing, which, by the way, I love the show's 13 episodes.
They are, like, it seems that NBC recognizes their solid comedies and they invest in them because they know in the long run they have another Parks and Rec on their hands.
I love this show so much. I can't believe it's been renewed. It's amazing news.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yep. Yeah. It's
That's why they kept like keeping Community for longer than seemed like they should.
This is interesting though because The Good Place, Community was one of those and so was Parks and Rec and all that where we were always like praying that it was going to survive but we didn't think it was. The Good Place actually bumped from season 2 to season 1. It's got 6.2 million viewers, which is not huge.
I feel like when
it's a bump.
Yeah, I feel like when it came out, a lot of people didn't know about it.
Yeah,
like,
I watched some word of mouth spread about it on Facebook and stuff.
Yeah, it's like people telling other people, oh, you need to go check out The Good Place on Netflix. And then people watch that and then go, okay, now I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, having it all on Netflix helps a lot.
Yeah.
I've introduced several people to it and they've all loved it and fallen completely in love with the show because it's one of the best shows on TV.
Exactly.
Speaking of one of the best shows on TV, one of the worst shows on TV is having ratings problems. That'd be The Walking Dead.
I love that they just continue to fall. They were so king shit, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they're just like surf shit.
That said, they still have 7.85 million viewers, which is higher than Good Place.
Damn it.
But not that much higher.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's lower than I would have thought.
Literally, I watched the Negan season opener and like, wow, we're not getting back into the show. I'm done.
Yep.
Finally, and this is definitely bad news, Brian Fuller and Michael Green have exited as showrunners of American Gods.
What?
Yeah.
What, you know, like, what's going to happen there?
That nothing show's gonna good. Bomb. That's not nothing that can't good. Possibly be good.
How, like what? That show is Brian Fuller. Like, that's his style, his kind of vision, and his quirk.
Well, apparently it was over money.
Ah,
they're pulling back the budget.
Yeah, Stars didn't want to give them more money.
Oh, Stars.
Yep,
Stars. It felt like you were on the right track, making some better calls with your shows and your production value.
Yep.
And these are one of those shows you got to pony up for.
Yep. Yeah, it's crazy. And here's the other thing. The big speculation for me is not what's going to happen to American Gods, because I liked American Gods. It's probably in my top 20 for the year, but I don't care that much about it. Whereas Fuller left Discovery after – because he went to do American Gods. So the question is, will he maybe go back and help develop season two of Discovery?
No, he's going to do Amazing Stories.
Oh, my God.
Oh, right. Yeah, maybe.
He's always got like another project.
Yeah, I think he already had four projects going. Or
yeah, yeah. Like a shark. He's got to keep moving forward.
Yeah, he's like, I might have to quit any one given project. So always have three more on the
Also
fire.
Like a shark. He can't sleep.
But like a weird shark, like a shark with a cape.
Yeah, he's like a shark with a cape.
So the first show we're going to discuss is the new Western over on Netflix. It is a miniseries, I believe.
7 episodes.
And this is this Soderbergh?
Yeah. Steven Soderbergh was one of the producers. Scott Frank is the writer, director of several episodes. And he's a guy you know as the screenwriter of things like Out of Sight and Minority Report.
And the show we're talking about is Godless.
Yep.
So I didn't watch this, but you guys got to check it out.
Yes, I've seen 4 episodes of it, I think. Randy's finished it.
I watched all 7, and I think it's interesting because Les and I had different reactions but wound up in the same place, which is that everyone should watch this.
Yeah, it's great. I'm not the biggest Western fan.
Yeah.
Westerns kind of have to be kind of particular for me to really get into them. Like, I loved Unforgiven, but as a kid, I wasn't just watching Westerns right and left.
That's exactly what I am, actually.
So, like, Tombstone was great, Unforgiven was great, but I don't care about watching John Wayne's entire career.
Yeah.
Deadwood is friggin' amazing, and while I wish the people in this, they still could have been a little scummier, like, they could have found a little less pretty actors still, it does a great job of getting that you people live out in just no man's land.
Yeah.
Territory.
The core of this one is a small town called La Belle. There was a mining town, and there was a mining accident, and basically all the men died.
I love the premise of it. I didn't know how they were going to set up that town.
Yeah.
But yeah, everybody who could worked underground, and so when they have a mine accident, it kills every man in town but like one.
Yeah, and so it's all women. There's a sheriff, and there's a deputy, but for the most part, it is all women running this place, and they have been for years. And then the mining concern sort of comes in and starts to get interested. And at the same time, there's sort of this young, handsome drifter who seems to have ties to this big gangster, this outlaw.
Roy Good, yeah.
Roy Good, who has ties to this big outlaw, played very merrily by Jeff Daniels. And the whole time, it's like this storm coming. Frank Griffin is the big bad, and they keep talking about him and how he's gonna come. And
it's not just Daniel's performance, which is great.
It is great.
Like, I like Jeff Daniels, but I'm not gonna go. I don't go see things just for him. It's not just that he does great with this role. As you find out more about the backstory of this guy, it's not sympathizing particularly.
No.
But you start to get a deeper understanding of him, and it's really great, and not in a sympathizing way, but you start to understand like the full scope of how bad this guy is.
What I really thought was interesting about Godless is it goes on, and it's a little slow. Did you find it slow?
Yeah, it is a little slow.
Because it's got a ton of characters. It's very character-driven. It's got a ton of characters. There's different settings. In addition to La Belle being the town, there's a town a little bit north, like a little outcrop that is filled with Buffalo Soldiers.
Yeah.
And then there's also a sort of a ranch where this woman, Alice, lives with her half Native American son and his grandmother, I think.
I can't remember the tribe that's near them.
And they're the ones who wind up taking in Roy Good. And there's that whole development going on there. And there's also there's a marshal played by Sam Waterston who's like wandering around looking after Frank Griffin. There's like a lot of characters.
There's also the sheriff played by Scoot McNairy.
Scoot McNairy, who's out. Yeah.
Fresh off of Halt and Catch Fire, which I didn't always love Gordon, but I love Scoot McNairy.
Scoot McNairy's great.
And he's great in this, but he's got his own story.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're watching his character arc and him doing things where he feels like he has to prove something. You're watching all of these threads, but it's masterfully done. I really am impressed with it four episodes in.
It requires patience, though, because as I watch it, and I watched all seven episodes, every episode I was like, do I like this or is this pretentious crap?
It's
really on that line sometimes, I think.
The action and everything, it reminds me of Unforgiven, which also rides that line of is this a pretentious morality lecture or is this a great Western?
Yeah.
And I feel like it comes down on great Western for me so far, but it burns like Unforgiven. There's this slow understanding of the rottenness in the human heart. Kind of like it's using Westerns for that kind of thing.
Here's what I'll say. It snuck up on me, though, because I get to episode seven. I know, and I'm not going to spoil it because I was blown away by episode seven because it is the culmination of everything. And it was so good, and it reminded me that I cared about characters I sort of didn't realize that they made me care about them. And then so that when they had the big, you know, moments for these characters, I all of a sudden really was invested. And I think that was sort of the thing. It snuck up on me a little bit. And now I really want to watch it again and knowing where it goes.
So don't pull a face and spoil anything, but I want to point out especially one of the actors in the show, Merritt Weaver. She is the sweet new nurse in Nurse Jackie. I've only seen a little bit of Nurse Jackie, but like on the first day of first episode of Nurse Jackie, I think she brings like cookies or something or brownies, loses an ear in a toilet.
Yep.
That's Mary. Anyway, she's the sister of the sheriff, I believe, in this, and a dead
she's,
shot.
She's sort of become the sheriff in a way when he's not there.
She clearly is running or wants to run this town if these other women she's would get in line behind characters. Her. She's great. Yeah. Like I had to go look up who that actress was because I really hope this show brings her into her own.
My other favorite character is Whitey.
Who Whitey
is the,
Wynn?
Yep. The two-gun
kid. He always does.
He's great. He's this young kid, Thomas Brody Sangster. And here's the thing. When I went to look him up, he is best known as the voice of Ferb on Phineas and Ferb. He was also in The Maze Runner, but to me, he's Ferb. And so to see Ferb be this badass gunslinger, who also is sort of like a vulnerable like kid.
He's the kid in Love Actually.
Yeah, he's the kid from Love Actually, and he was in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah, he was also, yeah, Georgian, yeah.
Yeah, he was being, yeah.
But most importantly, he was Ferb.
Okay.
Okay, no. But that I just thought that was funny. Anyway, he's great in this, and his arc I really, really liked. But, yeah, this was really, really good. It's an investment of time, and it will feel at times like a bit of a slog, I think, because it's a little slow, and you may wonder, why are we following these characters when there's all this other stuff going on the other side of the screen? But it pays off beautifully and is definitely worth a watch.
All right. Well, that's on the list to finish before the end of the year.
You got about, 2 weeks before you have to do the best of the list?
Oh, yeah. Hopefully we're doing that in a couple weeks here.
Yep.
Looking forward to it. All right. Well, let's jump over to The Runaways, or as you like to call it, Marvel's Runaways.
Marvel's Runaways. That's what it's called.
Okay. No the, I guess.
Hulu's Marvel's Runaways.
Okay. That's unnecessary. All right. So this is four episodes in. We've all caught up, and we are current with the show.
Yep.
This is adapted from the comic book that was by, what's his name?
Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfona in 2003.
I didn't read this. Did really? You read this last?
Yeah, I released the first volume of it in 2004 or so.
Wow, you never read this?
No, I had an idea that of basically what it's about. I think you've described it a couple times.
Yeah.
And my expectation was that because it's called Runaways, that all of these kids run away from home.
Yeah.
But now it seems to be about their parents capturing other runaways and using them for experiments.
Okay, so first of all, Runaways is one of my favorite comics.
Okay.
I love this comic.
I love Brian K. Vaughan and everything he touches.
So I was very nervous about this adaptation. The characters look is right, but a comic that was made about teenagers in 2003 is going to be very different than the team about teenagers in 2017.
Yeah.
And I knew that was going to require some changes. Some people are not okay with that. My 14-year-old was not cool with it. They loved the Runaways comic, and they were not cool with all these changes. But if you're cool with a good adaptation, I think it's a pretty great adaptation of the comic.
From what I've seen so far, this is really fun.
It's really
I love
good.
The dynamic that's going on with all of them. And one thing I was interested in is it seems like this Nico character is a new addition, who the sister who dies.
Yeah.
Amy.
Amy is the one who dies. Yeah. Okay. And Nico's the one who's alive. And I guess they're twin sisters.
Yeah. Nico's from the comics. Amy is new.
Oh, okay. So,
so they created a dead sister.
So Amy dying is new in the comics. Are when they're first introduced, are they all buddies, or are they kind of separated by some other incident?
So the way this works is they are like kids whose family, his parents get together once a year for some kind of, you know, meeting or whatever, and they're all forced to hang out. They've been doing this since they were little kids, and now all of a sudden they get together and they're teenagers and there's crushes and all this kind of stuff. And there's this whole thing of like these friends becoming friends, and then they discover the whole thing about their parents, and they go and they run away immediately. Like they get various different superpowers from their family. Mm. They discover their family is like a super villain cabal that has different powers.
And they each have inherited versions.
And they each have inherited powers, and they all go on the run away from their parents who are trying to track them down.
Okay.
And some of that is translated. For instance, Nico's mom and the her having kind of witch powers that translate or spell casting that translates down. That I remembered from the comic.
Yep.
Like it had been so long since I'd read this that the changes didn't immediately jump out to me, but I am with you. It does seem like the titular runaways in this are the sacrificed kids and not the teenagers.
And that's a notable change. In the comics, the sacrifices and all that kind of thing go to this big, crazy godlike beings in their dimension. Also, keep in mind, in the comics, it's in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
So they meet Wolverine and they meet Captain America.
So
and that
they
kind
have
of
access
thing.
To all the other big names.
Right. And powers is kind of a thing. Like Molly's a mutant. And they have to not do that kind of thing. So to modify it a little bit so it's its own universe makes perfect sense. But the whole Church of the Gibberum, the Gibberum in the comics are these big 30-foot tall evil beings that look like weird monsters.
Okay, and that's a funny nod.
And so that's a nod that the Gibberum is something else. There's a cult and that kind of thing. And so – but that makes perfect sense. And then they can tie in, like you say, the Runaways thing.
Well, I was really liking this idea that – if they did depart from these kids, like these kids were all friends, and the changes that they introduce a sister that died that kind of broke them all apart.
Yeah.
I think that's great, like television drama to have them all separated, to have all that conflict already established, and then to kind of force them to kind of work together.
Yeah.
Because that, like, just for writers, it gives such a bigger playground for them to kind of mix and match people and play with what tensions are going on there.
I agree.
And so that's a fascinating change.
I feel like more than a lot of high school shows or bands of kids shows, this did a good job for me of making it believable that these kids knew each other, used to like each other, don't anymore, aren't in the same social circles.
Right.
Like all the tension of them coming and going pretty much worked.
It feels like Veronica Mars a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I know they still had to take some shortcuts to have things happen, like all of them show up on the doorstep at the right moment in the first episode. You know, it's television. But there was a line of when they're going around the room insulting each other, and he's like, or be like you, Molly. I actually don't have anything against you. You're great. Like, there's some really great – when they find the secret room is one of the most believable reactions I've seen from a group of kids of, like, what just happened? I don't know what happened. Did you not see that door open? Like, their freak out is really dead on. I appreciate that there's a lot of changes, but my main question that they answered conclusively is it good television? And it is. The episodes work. Whereas I love Brian K. Vaughan's comics, but I'm not always sold on his television work. Didn't he have a hand in Under the Dome?
Yes,
it that was terrible.
Was terrible.
Like he's not a panacea on all shows for me, even though he's a great writer.
He also worked on Lost.
Son of a bitch. I knew you were gonna bring it up.
Actually, he was great on Lost.
But it wasn't an immediate like, oh, this is gonna be amazing, but he is involved with this show and he wrote that comic. I figured whatever changes they made to make this a functioning, good bubble universe.
Yeah,
and I'm willing to see where it goes. So far, they've 4 episodes in, and I'm hooked.
Well, like I say, this is one of my favorite comics, and so I was going to be kind of hard on it, and I think it's a fantastic adaptation. They're true to the spirit of the characters. Like, their casting, particularly the kid they got for Alex, is exactly how I imagine Alex Wilder being. So if you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of the comics, the show looks and feels like Runaways. It's just – it's 15 years later, so there had to be some changes in how they did things. And it's TV, so they're going to make some changes. The other big change is that they're focusing more on the parents.
Yeah, the casting of the adults for all the
amazing.
Parents.
Amazing.
James Marsters and all, and doing the first 2 episodes.
Is James
kids,
Marsters the dude from Aliens?
No, Spike. Kevin Weissman is the dude from Alias, Kevin, and I love him. So
those parents,
by the way, the sort of crazy hippie parents,
they're like the good people parents that like are kind of trapped in a bad situation.
I cannot wait. So Les may remember what those parents are, what their sort of power ability is. I do. You don't know yet, so I'm not going to spoil it.
I couldn't remember.
When you guys find out why they're the way they are and where their powers come from, if they go that way, and I think they might, it's going to be awesome. They may not. They seem to be like biogeneticists and that kind of thing, and they may not do the same crazy thing they did in the comics.
Yeah. I'm excited about the show so far.
This reminds me of Walking Dead in a way. Mm-hmm. Not in that it sucks, because it's good. But when I liked Walking Dead, Walking Dead was a comic and a show, and it was very different. So you could read the comics and watch the show and get a perfectly good experience out of both of them. Same with Runaways. If you like either one, you're going to like the other one, I think. Not everyone will, but in general. And you're not going to get spoiled on everything because they're going to be very different adaptations with the same spirit.
The idea that the parents don't necessarily have powers, I'm not sure if they're going to go that way or not.
Yeah.
But that they all have particular skills and gifts that they're kind of bringing to the situation that inform how their kids all develop powers or level up in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like the jock son.
Yeah.
That he is kind of figuring out like technological stuff, and he's making some punching gloves, it seems like.
Which is also
Fistigons.
Yep. Fistigons. It's also all this stuff is not like having the raptor in there.
They have a dinosaur in there. Yeah. It's really cool.
Yeah. I knew that was going to be there. I was really impressed with how they did it though.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, it was a good bonding moment too between the James Marsher's asshole father.
I mean, he looks just so sickly evil.
Yeah. Oh, his first line in the show is, if you were really scared of me, you'd be getting better grades. That's one of the worst father things to ever, like, imagine being said over breakfast
that's
to your kid.
That's fucked, right?
Yeah.
We all stopped in the room and went, damn. All right.
And I like the Molly character, the younger sister.
Yes.
Like, her reactions, like, she seems like she's almost about their age, but she says stuff that, like, oh, clearly you are younger than them. The fact that she jumps up and wants to take a photo of something, of the cult,
yes.
Like, that's what screws them all over. Or the fact that she goes online and tries to Google, or she's about to send that email that, like, all the questions you should not be asking.
Yeah.
Do I have powers?
Like, her response to getting her powers, like her cheering of, I did it, and then just...
Passing out.
Yeah. There's so much about the show. It's not quite. I mean, it's not Legion. It's not trying to be that show.
No.
But there are things about it that I wish were maybe a little serious or done a little bit differently. But for the most part, it looks classy. Hulu makes good looking shows.
Yeah.
The pacing's a little slow. I wish they'd kind of start hitting things a little bit quicker.
I think the biggest fair complaint is that they. We're four episodes in, and other than we know that there are runaways, kids haven't run away yet.
I wish that they had just dropped it all at once. I wish Hulu would just pick a format.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I binged through Future Man, and now I'm, like, shaking my fist at the end of Runaways. It's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, oh, man, I would have been so mad if I'd had to wait weeks and weeks and weeks for Future Man.
They did the same thing with...
I probably would have dropped it.
The Path, and I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what makes them
chance. I mean, most of their shows they do one episode per.
Yeah.
Future Man was the exception.
Well, anyway, I guess a round of approvals from all of us. A big recommendation there
for sure.
Check it out, guys. All right, so The Punisher has a 13 episode new season, and with each new season of a Marvel show, we've always complained that they're just a little bit too long. And a lot of them are just kind of boring and missing the mark on the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've seen all of The Punisher. Randy, you saw a little bit?
I saw three episodes.
Unless you haven't seen it yet.
Nope, skipping this one.
I will say, of the Marvel shows, this is my second favorite of them. I think this is right after Daredevil.
That's what I've heard people saying.
I liked it better than Jessica Jones.
That's crazy. I've heard people saying this. I watched the first three episodes, and I thought, okay, this is better than I expected to be. But I also – there was nothing about it that made me think, I want to watch eight more episodes of this or 10 more or however many there are.
It is it's solid and it's true to the character. I think it's very true to Frank Castle, and John Bernthal's portrayal is it's amazing. That how that guy can turn on a dime from just being hyper aggressive macho dude to just like the most sympathetic puppy who's just been wounded by so much in his life. And yeah, the guy wears it all on his face so well.
Bernthal is definitely the best part about this. He's fantastic.
But the guy they got to play Micro as well, you might remember him from Rubicon on AMC.
Is that where he's from?
He's not James Badge Dale, but he was one of the guys on the crew. The
okay, crew. All right.
Yeah, I remember him a little bit from that show. He's really good here, too. It's an interesting portrayal because the Micro I kind of remember is like this just gross nerd who lives in a van and helps him all the time. I remember it from the Spider-Man animated series mainly when he pops up, Punisher pops up. But I love how these stories kind of interconnect, and we should see how two different people, like separated from their families, are both kind of dealing with that pain of living underground, living on the outskirts of society, and trying to some way get revenge or redemption.
Right.
This show, it's a little slow in the middle. I'd say like it starts off pretty good establishing the conflict, establishing where Frank Castle's at and how he kind of gets dragged back into being the Punisher because he's living under a pseudonym for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But once he kind of gets a taste of murder spree, he's back in it. And then the show drags for, I'd say, episode 4 through 8. It's a little slow and plotting. I still think there's things going on there, but it didn't have the same drive as you kind of want. I'd say it was better than any of the episodes of Iron Fist, and probably most of all of Defenders as well.
Hey, even Marvel's Netflix's episodes. The Meachums was a good show.
Yeah, it's just everything is better. Like, it's still got a compelling drama there. It's just that I kept going, this is a Punisher. I really want it to kind of amp up. And then all of a sudden, episode 8 or 9, some bombs start going off.
Okay.
Everything gets more intense. And episode by episode, suddenly they start getting creative with like their directing and like how they're structuring their story. They go hyper violent. And I was very impressed with how this show could have just been a dude's revenge fantasy.
Yeah.
But it instead really plays up the angle of forgotten soldiers, what the military, what these people sign up for, what they come home to, and how people just kind of leave them by the wayside. And these people are psychologically damaged a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't flinch from that. It lives in it. It shows the people that come back broken and you can sympathize with them. It also shows the ones that come back broken and you don't have to sympathize with them. And it's fascinating how it does it.
That is probably my biggest thing that I thought was the strength of the Punisher was that my worry about the Punisher is it is a dated concept. It is a scary right wing fantasy. It's a
first
guy
who, blood meets death wish.
Yeah, it's a guy who goes out with a gun and starts mowing down people on the street. And if he'd been taking on street crime, it would have been the most tone deaf thing I'd ever seen. So instead, they took a turn with it. Instead, his foes are sort of a military conspiracy, and
he's taking on like Blackwater. He's taking on black ops people.
Yeah, and it makes a lot more sense, and it makes him the perfect foe for these people. It is the only way to deal with someone who's set themselves up as above the law and is untouchable because they're this military force is a guy who is a one-man military force who does not give a shit about the law.
Yeah.
It works. It's a good readjustment, and I'm glad they made that readjustment. I'm still not sure I'm interested because, like I said, I watched 3 episodes, and I'm like, this is good. But I've got so much else to watch.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say. Like, I understand where it goes into a lull, but I was talking to our buddy Rubio about this, and I was saying, man, I'm just really, like, I don't know, I'm getting a little bit bored on this show. And he's like, what episode are you on?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I'm on 7 or 8. He's like, keep going. And holy shit. It's like,
and that's the problem with Marvel's Netflix shows, that the problem is that they can't I don't know why they can't just go to 10 or 8 episodes.
Well, I'd say they're 4 episodes too long, but they trimmed it down for Defenders, and that's the worst thing they've done so far.
Yeah, Defenders was 8 episodes too long.
I mean, I was never a huge, I was never a huge Punisher fan, so this isn't like I wanted to see this show since I was a kid for me.
Right.
I never cared about this character.
Either.
I definitely don't really want to sit down for 13 hours of making me sympathize with a broken man with a fully automatic weapon that takes the law into his own hands and his own twisted sense of justice right now. Like, I can watch the fucking news.
Yeah.
I don't think this show's going to add enough to the conversation to be worth it for me, but there's no way to make this show without it being in that conversation.
Yeah.
And so, in my opinion, rather than saddle a superhero show with saying something important about gun violence and vets, Marvel should have just not fucking made it. And they know I'm right because they skipped screening it at Comic-Con after Vegas because they know it's distasteful and they shouldn't be in this conversation. Nothing in their previous Netflix shows, even the ones I've enjoyed, have said anything important enough to give me faith that they were going to take the Punisher right now in 2017 and really do something great with it to make it worth 13 hours of me sitting through this.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I mean, I am thrilled that they changed it off of street crime to something else because that was just going to be awful. Like, First Blood, Death Wish is not a fucking thing I want right now.
No, no.
That, like, basically, the 13 hours of Blue Caprice is not what I want to watch. And that was really what Punisher was looking like to me. It was like, I remember the sniper from 2001, 2002. Yeah. I don't really want to watch a Netflix show that romanticizes him and puts him in the same league with Daredevil.
That was my biggest.
Didn't love this character as a kid. I don't know.
That is the biggest strength of the show is that they took what works about the character, and they modified it for our times. Because you're not wrong.
I've also not watched a stitch of this show.
There's so many ways this could have been tone deaf and terrible, and it's not. And apparently, it gets fantastic. And if I had more time, I would probably finish watching it.
So knowing who he is, can I just drop in at episode 8? I mean,
here's what I would say: maybe watch the first couple episodes. It's kind of nice to see how he meets up with Micro, and then go ahead and read the wiki synopsis up through episode either 8 or 9, where these explosions start going off, and then he kind of faces off against a Timothy McVeigh character.
Yada, 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 explosions.
Yeah. And then go through there, because then it becomes like this just one man taking down all these bad people and taking down the man, basically. And it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. I just also want to mention that you see a confrontation between him and a Billy Russo character. Do you know who that is?
Nope.
Oh, well.
Is it Jigsaw?
Yeah.
Because Punisher has one villain, it's Jigsaw.
It's Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And I liked the guy who played him. Ben Barnes plays Billy Russo.
I figured that's who that was.
He does a pretty good job of portraying a character that, like, okay, you're a bit of a sociopath, but at first you're like a lovable, kind of good-looking dude. Yeah.
A scamp sociopath.
Yeah, you're a scamp. Well,
I will say, as far as villains go, I've always liked Jigsaw in the comics, just because he's just a mob heavy, basically, right?
Yeah.
That gets turned into a comic book level supervillain by sheer, like, you did this to me, man. Right?
He gets thrown through a window by the Punisher and turns into a supervillain.
Yeah.
Yeah, here he's best friends with Frank Castle. They came up in the military together, and then they take diverging paths.
Because it always looked like the, like, poor man's two-faced Joker, something like acid and a big extravagant. No, man, he threw me through a plate glass window.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Oh, this it's more brutal.
Not just sugar glass in this one.
It's fucked. All right, guys. Well, that's our thoughts on these shows. Please let us know what you guys think in the comments. And, you know, next week, what are we going to be talking about?
We're going to be talking about the CW crossover, as promised.
Crisis on Earth X.
Someone was just asking me about that.
We're going to talk about She's Gotta Have It. We're going to talk about Easy. We're going to talk about Search Party.
Oh, sweet. I'm very excited about Search Party. And the other ones, whatever.
And She's Gotta Have It is great.
All right, guys. Les, thank you. Randy, thank you.
Thank you, Grant.
Listeners, thank you. We're going to wrap things up right here. We'll be back next week. And until then,
TV Dudes out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.